Welcome, where business buying banter meets no BS reality. Get ready to dive into the world of buying and selling businesses without the fluff and fancy jargon. Whether you're a seasoned business buying pro or a curious aspiring entrepreneur, this is where the real talk happens. Because in business, there's no room for sugarcoating. Let's get down to the brass tacks.
Hey there, Richard! What's
hello,
going on?
Hello, hello, hello. How are you?
It's always a great day on Thursday because I get to meet with my best friend, Richard.
Isn't that great? I look forward to it all day. It's nice. I actually had breakfast today with someone. We met at summer camp when I was seven. And we've been friends all these years. We don't see each other as frequently, but she's down in Florida for a week with her husband. And we had breakfast this morning. And when you're talking about old friends, yeah, imagine all these years, 55, going to be 56 years that we've been friends.
That is incredible.
Isn't that wild? Isn't that wild? Yeah, crazy, crazy.
I love that. Well, that'll be us 50 years from now, too.
You don't. If we're doing this show in 50 years from now, shit, we're in trouble. We're in deep trouble. I can't even imagine what I'm going to look like. But anyways, I appreciate the compliment and it's terrific to see you.
You too. So today's topic is all about cash. Well, not necessarily the green stuff, finding a way to create the cash, the green stuff.
Yes.
So, I think of business brokers, Richard, when they're meeting with business buyers, which is typically the normal route, not necessarily the best route to start your journey when you want to be buying a business and you're searching, is starting with the business broker, because the first thing they want to see is your bank statements and how much cash you have before a conversation is even had. And I get that, but do they really know where to seek and find other eligible sources of additional cash, because they could be missing the boat, the business brokers, on buyers that have access to other eligible sources of that cash. And that's what we're going to get into today.
Wonderful. And you know, it's not really incumbent upon the broker. All of this, so much of this process, like really 90% of this process, is incumbent on the buyer. And that becomes a misunderstanding by a lot of people who are getting into this for the first time, thinking that all these stakeholders, brokers, accountants, attorneys, are going to take them to the promised land. And it's incumbent upon the buyer to acquire the knowledge they need to put together the right team, to go through the process effectively, understanding the role of business brokers. And business brokers, and I don't blame them, they want to make sure that you have the money and they want to make sure you can get to the finish line. And so It's not their skill set, or some have it, but it's not generally their area of expertise to uncover the nuggets and find other potential assets or other capital that they can leverage, like you do, like the shining star that you are, the queen of the gold nugget. So tell me, for example, so they have these buyers, they have an average personal financial statement, assuming that they want to go down the road of an SBA loan. What do the lenders, and we know from all our shows together that there's a big change between lenders, or big difference between lenders, what they require. But on the whole, what do they want to see from a buyer as far as the ability to fund, the equity portion that they're responsible for into the deal?
Yeah, that goes down to being fully transparent with that personal financial statement, not leaving anything out. Sometimes, I don't know why, but some business buyers don't want to disclose everything on their personal financial statement, whether they're just lazy and they don't feel like filling it out, or maybe they just don't want people to know how much they have.
You know why they do it, Deb? Because I've had this come up over and over again for 20 years. They believe that if they demonstrate too much, the seller is going to think or negotiate terms in the sale of the business just because they can afford it. And I always tell them, it's actually the complete opposite. By you demonstrating you have the capital, that puts you much further towards the front of the line to demonstrate that you can execute this transaction. This has nothing to do with the terms. It doesn't matter if you have a business that they want to sell for $1 million and it's the value is $500,000. Just because you have a lot of money doesn't mean that you're going to pay $1 million for the business. The seller may think you're going to, but you're doing the valuation, not them. Disclosing the more robust your financial statement that you could present to lenders, brokers, sellers, the better off you are. The thinking is completely flawed when they do it the opposite way.
Yeah. And I would like to open up your thoughts for business brokers to open up their thoughts in regards to what more do they have besides just cash?
Right, right.
Because assets can be turned into cash. And we're going to walk through that. I believe you're right that business buyers must present everything that they have in that financial statement, but business brokers also are cutting themselves short on selling businesses because they're trying to pre-qualify buyers on cash alone, where
right.
an SBA business acquisition loan consultant like myself or my peers that I work with, some are solutions focused and will dig in deeper asking questions on how we can generate these additional eligible sources. That's not a business broker's job to do that. So
absolutely not.
Start the process buyers with the people that know what is eligible. And sometimes that's not one direct SBA lender. You may be dealing with someone that has been on the job for 2 years and doesn't really know what all the eligible sources are or how to get creating that equity injection to get a loan approval to buy the business. So,
and where do you see some of the biggest gaps where there may be more assets? Or, for example, maybe we take a step back. The lenders want to see equity, whether it be equity, let's say equity in their home or equity in holdings, tax. Stock holdings, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But what are some of the things, obviously cash is king. Then going down the list, cash, then stock portfolio, home equity. What about retirement funds?
I'm glad you brought that up. And
well, you can count on me for something every once in a while during the show. Not much, but here I am every once in a while.
That is a vehicle that can be used to create tax-free cash by pulling it out of your 401k if you're leaving that employer, or many of us seasoned corporate employees over the years, I've been at a few different employers where I built up 401ks and we may have transferred them to Fidelity Investments and piled all of our 401ks into one area. Well, that builds up over time. And there is a program called ROBS, R-O-B-S is the acronym, Rollover Business Startup, or ROBS. Some people call them ROBS, some people call them ROBS, depends what state you're from.
So we're going to open the robe. Okay, let's go.
ROBS. Yes. I'm actually going to ask you as well. We're going to invite a guest. Her name is Susie Granger from Guidant Financial. She's an expert and she's been—
Yeah, they're good, Guidant.
Yeah, she's been delivering this ROBS program, tax-free rollovers, where buyers can use those funds tax-free as down payment to purchase finance a business. I'm not the expert. There's pros and cons to everything, and she'll explain that. But
great.
I have funded deals, Richard, many times where people will roll over their 401k as the down payment to purchase the business. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is cool. And you know, I've had it. Guidant's been around for many years. They've done a really good job as far as bringing awareness to people. One thing that I see from lower buyers or lower market buyers is, or pushback or concern related to risk. I've saved up all this money in my 401k and why am I going to use it now? Or there's some pushback and justifiably so from a spouse, partner says, hey, we got to think twice before we leverage, our retirement plan. On the other hand, people need to understand sometimes these type of savings are exactly for these types of opportunities. Mm-hmm. And in entrepreneurship, you know, there's always going to be an element of risk, whether that's leaving a job, whether that's, you know, taking your savings, putting it down on the business, whether it's, you know, providing or collateralizing a loan with home equity or rolling over your 401k plan. But they certainly are, you know, viable options. And part of the reasons for why you've been doing all of this, if entrepreneurship is your dream, these are the exact things that you have to look at and has to be with a lens of, okay, at least I'm open-minded to consider all of these things.
Yeah. Yeah. I would like to toss in any listeners out there that are thinking of doing a ROBES rollover, check with a acquisition loan consultant or your direct SBA lender, because as we always say, Richard, every bank has their different in-house credit policies. Well, guess what? There are banks out there that only want to deal with certain ROBES rollover companies like a Guidance or a Beneficial. There are tons of other ones out there, and we have to be careful because some charge more than others. There's monthly service fees,
right?
There, you know,
there's setup fees, right? Yeah. And I think it's Benetrends, right? Is that the one you're meaning? And I'm not sure if they're amalgamated, but they've also been around for a long time. So I'm assuming that the big ones, it would seem to me that if you're going to do that, you want to get with the players that have been doing this the longest. They have the most comprehensive team behind them. There's some question. It has to be bought through a C corp, not an S corp. I'm not sure if that's still the case, but having the resources as opposed to someone who's just brokering these type of deals, dealing with a comprehensive, reputable company. And I recall they were always very positive with encouraging the buyer's accountant, attorney, etc., to financial planner to look at it to make sure that that part of their team is very comfortable with the transaction. So they always struck me as a very legitimate group.
Yes, indeed. I do know there are annual IRS requirements that must be completed every year with the ROBES program. I don't want to get into the details. We'll save that for our special guest one day. But listeners, please understand, yes, you got to have cash, but there is a source there that Richard and I are talking about already. You could combine your cash plus maybe a ROBES rollover of your 401k. Maybe you sprinkle in a seller note with the 2-year standby, slice and dice it three ways to get to your 10%. You got a deal. See how that works? Yeah.
Now, what about gifts, family, friends, giving you money? The one thing I've never had the luxury of enjoying in my life. Okay. But I should say, I haven't had the luxury. I've had the honor of doing it the other way to my kids. If you have family members, friends, etc., who may want to lend you the money, or there's two parts, lend you the money or gift you the money. Gift would be nice. But if they're going to lend you the money for the down payment, is that something that's carved out? You're okay with doing that, but that's carved out because all these secondary loans, whether it be a seller note or gift or a loan from, friends and family, those take a secondary position, of course, over the bank's loan. But with that in place, isn't there some change recently where it's not standby, it's secondary position? So in other words, you can pay those notes as long as you're satisfying the first note, because it used to be in standby where you couldn't even pay those secondary notes until the SBA note was paid off. Now I think there's a bit of a change to that, right?
Well, there's a big change with the new SBA SOP that went into effect in fall of last year. The SBA is telling the banks and the non-bank lenders, you guys decide what you want to do and what you feel comfortable for equity injection. The SBA SOP says in there, you could do 100% seller note for the whole equity injection. But I'm going to tell you right now, bank lenders aren't going to fly on that one. I think I knew one lender that did 100% financing for a buyer because the sweat equity, the buyer had been employed for like 15 years. So they looked at sweat equity as the cash down payment. So what I'm trying to say here, Richard, is that anything that is eligible in the SBA's eyes for equity injection can be sliced and diced however the bank feels comfortable to do it. Okay.
Yeah, so right. Okay.
Anything can happen. Yes.
So what, the situations where, it's wonderful that they set up this SOP and there's a lot of wiggle room. There's this 100% wiggle room, but the reality is no one does it. So who gives a shit? Excuse me. Like if no one does it, who cares? It's just like smoke and mirrors to present something as an opportunity. Banks don't do it. So that's not going to happen. So how does someone go, and I'm not teeing this up as a question for your service, but, or maybe I am, is, going through, a buyer is faced, there's hundreds of SBA lenders. Mm-hmm. And so when they deal with someone like yourself, how quickly are you able to look at scenarios where, because some buyers come to you, they simply don't have any, their financial statements not going to pass any criteria. I mean, their only hope is seller financing, the only hope. And that happens in a lot of cases. Mm-hmm. But how are you able to look at that and say, realistically, this is, leaving the business side, realistically, here's, I think we've got the probability of X for you to get an SBA loan without, putting your butt on the line, or putting yourself in a really bad position. Is that something when someone comes to you with a personal financial statement, may not have terrific credit, they have a few bucks or whatever the case may be, like how often do those people pass? In other words, your first gatekeeper area where you say, I think we could do this or we can't.
I have a business buyer profile document that I ask prospects that want to learn if they're pre-qualified to fill out for me to open up the conversation. And any bank or non-bank lender that's going to deliver 90% of the capital for the loan project, they're going to want skin in the game from the business buyer. It is what it is. So when I look at that buyer profile, Richard, I need to see that they do have some cash and that they also have enough cash to cover post-closing liquidity, meaning you have enough in your savings account in case there is an emergency. Personally, on the personal side, there's 6 months of liquidity in your personal savings account. We don't want the buyer purchase financing a business to dry up every dollar out of their personal savings. We're not putting them in a good condition.
In a good position, right?
That's right. So when I see there's not enough income there, and I don't see any home equity, they're renters. And it's not to say I can't approve somebody that doesn't own a home. We can approve people that are renters. They may have a ton of cash in their account. They may have stocks and bonds. They may have retirement assets, right? They may have other real estate owned. So yeah, we can help out people that maybe don't own a home. There's just so much that I look at. But I also got to be careful because somebody may have like only 20 grand in their savings account and they want to buy a $2 million business. Well, what if grandma or grandpa or the parents have money and they're willing to be an investor into the deal, right? That can work. So we have to always have eyes wide open to ask open-ended questions of business buyers and mentor them as to what all the other sources are that truly can be eligible based on the different banks' credit criteria out there.
Right. And so they need to, right. So, I mean, so the answer with some of these things, because there's always a tremendous amount of people within the world of looking to acquire businesses that look at this the same way when they drive by the car dealership, in their area to see, you buy it with no credit, no cash down, no money, drive it, pay and drive today. And it doesn't work in buying businesses. So the realistic portion is you've got to have capital for your down payment. Mm-hmm. There's just tremendous number of avenues where that can come from.
Right.
And so those are things that you explore. On the other side of things are for the buyers who don't have that, but they have the, a tremendous desire to acquire a business. And we'll cover that in another show as to how they potentially go about that. Mm-hmm. But for them, the buyers to be completely transparent and not, and so they know if this is a possibility to get the financing. And another thing that I've seen and would caution prospective business buyers going down, you know, looking for third party financing, whatever that may be. So in other words, they're not paying cash for the business. Because you see this all the time, to your last point. Oh, you know, my uncle, my grandmother, or I have a group of investors and they're, you know, they're interested and they told me, yeah, they'll back me, and it's all fine and good. And I've seen it countless times where an individual goes through the whole process. They find business, they start negotiating with the seller, they agree to some deal terms, and then they go through, meet their investor, and they're not writing the check.
Yeah.
And so when you have a scenario where someone else is going to fund the business, if it's not an immediate family member who's, you know, of the ilk of, hey, I trust you, and you know, when you find it, I'll give you the money. That's very different than one or a group of investors who say, yeah, we will back you. So what you want to do in those scenarios is, as soon as you find any business of interest, doesn't even have to be the one that you're potentially going to buy, and you may be in early stages, you've got to go meet with your investors and you got to walk through the business. And even before that, when they represent that they're going to do something with you or finance you, you got to say to them, well, here's the type of business that I'm looking for. Lay out for me the criteria that you want to see. Because when the time comes, you got to make sure they're going to write the check.
Darn right. I'm glad you brought that up, because I have experience in my younger days.
Your days are right now.
Yeah. But I always say those who have walked through the fire are the qualified, because they've been burned. Listen, right. I've been burned and I've learned. I've seen business buyers tell me, and I trusted them, oh yeah, my dad is going to gift me some funds. And then, you know, we want a letter that says there's no payback, because that's an SBA requirement. And I trust the buyer that that's true and accurate. And then when push came to shove, after got rolling, Dad never said that.
Right.
He just had a dream. Dad would say yes, but Dad said no. So I know going forward to vet those sources right out of the gates.
Absolutely. And and the buyer needs to do that too. They should be vetting their sources. Mm-hmm. You don't want to go down and spend all kinds of time looking at businesses and find out they're not going to be available to write the check. Because at the beginning, everybody, you know, they could represent that, but till they have to put their hand in their pocket, they could change their mind, and they're entitled to do so. Yeah. So qualify that at the beginning when you have a group of investors that have any criteria attached to it, versus, you know, your parents, or say they'll give you the money. That's different. But meet with them early, understand their criteria, and keep them up to date during the process. As you're looking at a particular business, keep them informed, keep them up to date, because you don't want to go through all of this and find out then you have no dollar sources whatsoever. I mean, that's just a monumental waste of time. And I see it over and over again. Happens all the time.
Yeah.
I think we have some questions, by the way. I don't have my glasses on, so I can't see anything, but I'll put these goggles on for a second.
There we go.
Oh, there you are, Deb, look at you. Okay, yeah, I got the goggles on. Good. Hello, 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 she says. Okay. Are there resources or guidance available to help businesses determine their financial readiness for the down payment? I'm assuming she means the for business, prospective business buyers. So
yeah, that would be me. That would be me. I would be the one that
tell me, Deb.
Yeah. I would help aspiring business buyers understand if they qualify based on their personal financial statement today. And furthermore, when you're transparent and you put everything on that statement, I will help you discover if there's other avenues for cash down payment. I did a post today on LinkedIn with a short video about how a business buyer went through a listing broker to get SBA financing to purchase finance a very well-qualified staffing agency. It was cash flowing like a cow. She would have exhausted all of her personal cash liquidity, leaving nothing behind after the loan closed. So the three lenders that the listing broker referred her to all said no three times. I wasn't one of the lenders in that business broker's circle, because business brokers and SBA lenders, they work together and they earn incentives because they refer business to one another, which is fair and equal. SBA says that's fine, but the door was shut, and that broker didn't refer that buyer to me. The buyer happened to find me on her own. I dug in deeper. she had a couple of vehicles on her personal financial statement, and I knew she was single. She was unmarried. And I asked her.
Smart.
Yeah. But I, you know, I knew what the problem was. She didn't have enough post-closing cash liquidity on her personal financial statement.
Right.
So when I saw that she lived in Minnesota and the business she was acquiring was in Florida.
Smart again. She's getting smarter by the minute. Yeah. Get the hell out of that joint. It's much warmer here.
Oh, for sure. That was a big reason why she wanted to buy the business was the weather. But I'm like, what are you going to do with a 4x4, a Jeep four-wheel drive that she owns in Minnesota along with a Toyota Camry? I go, which one do you drive? Well, I drive the Camry. Well, what are you going to do with the Jeep when you buy the business in Florida? Well, I'm going to sell the Jeep when I'm in Florida. I'm like, no, you're not. You're going to sell the Jeep now while you're in Minneapolis and there's 6 feet of snow and you're going to get top dollar because everybody wants a four-wheel drive in Minnesota. Yep. And sure enough, she listened to what I said. She took it to a CarMax and they gave her a bid of $32,000 on a used four-wheel drive. I contacted the bank underwriter. I said, listen, we got all the cash for the down payment. Now we got $32,000 liquid cash she's going to put in her personal savings. Are you comfortable with that for a post-closing liquidity requirement? Yes.
Yay, boom. Deb. Look approved. At you. Boom.
Yeah. Boom. That's now great. That's the stuff. And that broker just about lost a sale of a quality business.
Yep.
An unhappy buyer that worked with three SBA lenders that just didn't dig enough and dig deep and ask questions of the seller. Like, what are you doing with two vehicles? But who does that, Richard?
Because it's your job. They just want it. You know, it's the again,
transactional.
It's the skill set. It's transactional skill set. And my opinion is, you know, there's plenty that business brokers do wrong. There's lots that they do right. This is incumbent upon the buyer. Get with the right resources, get with the right consultants and advisory. Yes, it's upsetting because they should have directed them. Yes, you say it's easy to say, you know, they should have asked questions or, you know, expand their network of potential lenders beyond the scope of where they may just be getting compensated. That's just wrong. That's just bad advice. But the buyers throughout this whole process, and you know, I'm dealing this with for decades, is buyers need to acquire the knowledge they need for all stages of the process. This happens at lending. It happens in negotiation. It happens in valuation. It happens in the business selection, choosing the right business. It's all the way around. So it's just another example of, you know, hooking yourself up with the right people. And she's obviously brilliant for all the reasons that we cited. She's moving to Florida, or as they say in Massachusetts, she's wicked smart. Right? Wicked smart. Yeah. And, and now she's, and how long, I'm assuming that in Minnesota, selling a 4x4 in the throes of winter is a pretty quick sale.
It was like within a couple of days.
Yeah, right.
And here's the funny thing.
She probably would have got half in Florida.
She probably could have sold it for more if she retailed it herself, but we were past the purchase agreement deadline. Right. So we had a bust dupa. Right?
Bust a butt. Yeah.
Bust a butt to get the deal done.
So you got it done. Yay, Deb. Another one. Bing.
I'm proud of her. Bell. She's 2 years in. I got to get a bell for our show. I'm going to do that. I'm going to get a bell.
Ring the bell.
Yeah. But I checked up on her and she's doing well. She's 2 years into the ownership transition. It was absentee owned when she bought the business. It's still absentee owned with her today. She just oversees it. There's key employees. Guess what she's going to do next?
Buy a truck.
No, she's going to
buy another staffing company.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's an entrepreneur. All right. I love those stories. Well, I think we have some questions here.
All right. Let's see what do we got?
Let's just see here. Are there any circumstances, it's my first day with my new tongue. Are there any circumstances under which the down payment requirement may be waived?
I'm going to answer that it's based on bank comfort levels, credit decision comfort levels. I go back to the 100% financing where there was no down payment from the buyer because she was a 15-year employee and they looked at it as if that was sweat.
Right. That's a sweat equity.
Right. Yeah.
And that's also going to overcome the, you know, the requirement as far as relevant industry knowledge, et cetera. And, yeah. You know, I think we should probably make a note to have one show related to the topic of these scenarios where people don't have money, but they've been working for somebody.
Yeah.
And they have an opportunity to potentially acquire the business, because I've done tons of those deals and help buyers do that.
Oh,
or
yeah.
In scenarios where they may be outside the company, they don't work there, but they have relevant industry experience, they don't have the money, and there's a way, like, not to get off topic, where they can go in, acquire a smaller percentage of the business, bring some value because of their skill set to a retiring or soon to be retiring owner, and then leverage what they bring to the table, take a little bit less salary at the beginning, and leverage a percentage of profits into a purchase price. Like, I've done that tons of times, and it's a really good way to you know, to get into business ownership where you normally wouldn't have the resources to do that. But mm-hmm. The individuals working at the company, they're in a real good position with a lot of lenders and mm-hmm. a lot of even other investors potentially, because they know the business. I mean,
right.
One of the hardest pieces is to, you know, to be able to hit the ground running with a new business. So that, you know, that offers a lot of comfort to lenders, to sellers, you know, mm-hmm. Traditional lenders. And when they looked at their sweat equity, this individual had a meaningful position at the company.
Mm-hmm.
Right. They were there. They were
definitely, of course. Yep. Yeah.
Well, that's great.
And right on, Richard. You're right on the right path there. And another circumstance where the down payment requirement may be waived, buying out your competition.
Right.
100% oh, really? Financing. Done several deals like that over the years.
I didn't know that. Yeah.
Yeah. If you're a landscaping company and your NAICS code shows you're a landscaper, well, that competition that you know, and you probably help each other. I got two vets in my hometown. One overflows, the other picks up, and vice versa. They just kind of, you know, it just goes to show we need a third vet in town, but these two are monopolizing. If one bought out the other, they're the same NAICS code, meaning the same industry on their business tax return. You can get that deal done buying out your competitor at 100% financing.
Can could you get that type of financing buying out an ancillary business? So example, landscape company buying snow removal, not in Florida, but in Minneapolis, where there's a very clear connection of, you know, same or similar customers, you know, it eliminates seasonality issues. Like, it's a very well thought out strategic acquisition.
It's going to have to be the same NAICS code, period. That's an SOP requirement. Now, the underwriter may be a little bit more lenient on very minimal cash down. So maybe instead of 100% financing, he may say, I would like to see 3-5% down and kind of change things up.
What a deal.
It is a deal. It is a deal.
And the advantage, if you have a company, I mean, you're going to buy a business for, $1 million business. I mean, if you don't have 50 grand, you shouldn't probably be buying your competition, right? Because you're going to have headaches with that too, to the integration. But it's, I had a podcast recently that I was on, and we were talking about that. And one of the greatest ways to grow your business is through acquisition. It's a hell of a lot easier than organic growth. In almost every case. And so, and small businesses, real small businesses doing a few $100,000 or whatever, they don't think that way. But there's chances are, if you have a small business, you have a lot of competition that have other similar or same small businesses. A great way to grow your business. And one of the big advantages, by the way, you buy out your competition, you don't need to take any money out of the business initially. As long as your business is relatively stable, you can use all of their cash flow to pay off the loan as fast as possible.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of becoming a bit of a pig and looking at their profit, you take all their profit, use it to pay down the debt and to put it into marketing, as opposed to putting it into your pocket for a period of 2 to 5 years. And suddenly 1+1 equals wow.
Exactly. In addition to inheriting probably some seasoned employees.
Absolutely.
And think about the expense reduction if you move into one location.
Yeah, possibly,
right?
For sure. Yeah,
yeah,
absolutely. A lot of advantages.
Can I share just a couple other quick ideas here for our audience of other eligible sources?
Go.
Okay. So we talked about family gifted funds or love money. Remember love money we talk about? You can have investment owners inject some of the cash. That can be bank by bank comfort level. We may have a majority buyer who's the owner operator, and perhaps there's an investment buyer that wants to put the cash down. We won't get into it now, but they're going to look at why and who and how do we know this investment? Are there any MSA agreements that are that the SBA won't approve of, you know, management service agreements of some sort? We got to be careful there, but there are options there. We talked about debt, you know, borrowing debt, home equity. If you have home equity in your real estate owned, that can be used as down payment. And the old SOP said that there had to be secondary household income making the home equity payment. That has gone away per the SOP, but be careful, ladies and gentlemen. Most banks still want that secondary household income. So it makes it confusing. What you think is going to be a great deal, it might be different depending upon the bank that you're working with. I like this one. If you are a business owner today and you want to buy a second or a third business in a completely different industry, mind you, yes, you can, as long as the business that you own today is absentee owned and has key employees and are running the show profitably.
Because you got to be the owner operator of the new one.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
And if your current business that has been doing well, which it better be doing well before you buy another business, you can use some of the cash available from that business to buy the new business. But the underwriter will want a note on the business that you're pulling the money from that the new business will eventually pay back the old business, because we want to keep where money is pulled from.
So a second position note.
Yeah.
Now, are there any restrictions? So in that example, because it's a great way to build a portfolio of companies, you own company A, you put a management in place. Now you go buy company B, you get an SBA loan, you're the manager there. Could you rinse and repeat and do that with 10 different times as long as the math works out?
As long as the math works out. And I have clients that own 3 to 5 businesses in their portfolio. It's the coolest thing to witness. And great then they create an umbrella LLC, a shell to oversee all of these entities that roll up to the main mm-hmm. core.
Right.
And it works great. And usually these buyers, these owners are so good at managing people that the people that they train up, they stay. And then what they do is they kind of commingle some of the managers overseeing other businesses as needed. So if one's short, they move someone over there. So it's pretty cool to see how.
Yeah, it's a great strategy.
It is. So I think we went through most everything. You know, other cash options are sometimes business owners buy equipment or there's cash expenses in their current business. There are some SOP guidelines. You can use that cash to buy another business, so to speak. Pulling it out of the current business. So I know it gets a little bit hairy.
But you know what? The most important thing, there's a ton of options.
A ton of options. And I think a lot of listing brokers, I want them to understand if they're listening today, don't be so focused on just personal bank statements. And be careful. Your lenders, perhaps that you're working with as a partner, they may not be asking all of the questions like the Jeep 4x4 scenario that came up with $32,000, right? It's not every day. Money. It's a lot of money and not every day people are thinking outside the box.
People should also stick to your swim lane. You do your best. If you're a broker and you don't get it approved or for whatever reason, you've got to go to the, expand it to find believable parties who are more experienced at this and do this every day for a living. And we talked about this in one of our first shows is forget about the fee that you're going to get from a loan. I mean, who gives a shit? I mean, you want to get the deal to the finish line, the money you're going to make and the good that you're going to potentially do by putting a good person into a good business far outweighs the small commission that you're going to get as an SBA referral source. It's a small amount of money. I'm not spitting on any amount of money, but relatively speaking, it's minimal. And that's not your job. Your job is, to get to buyers to the finish line in good deals. And so it, you know, start to focus properly as if the buyer doesn't meet the criteria, the first three lenders, it's not over then. That's when it just begins. And that buyers might be a terrific buyer. And so put them in touch with someone who can make sure they get the deal done, as opposed to you thinking you could deal done. Who cares about the commission? I mean, it's nice. I first of all, I don't think it's right altogether, but that's, you know, I don't want to be judgmental. That's just my perception of things. But the lesson is get them to in front of the right people throughout this process. Get them to happy Deb Curtis, and she'll get you to the promised land. There you, you know, go.
I'm, my theory is, let me do the searching and the digging and the sourcing and the asking, because I know what's eligible, and I'll find a way to get mom and dad or grandpa to give some love money where you might not be able to do that as a business broker. What business brokers should be focusing on is getting the next business listing that is qualified to put on the market. You know, that's where their bulk of their money is being made. I want them to go find more quality listings. Leave the business buyer qualifying up to an expert that's been doing it, and will find a way to get the deal done.
Well said. Yep.
So tell me this, as we're wrapping up our show, it's special report time.
Yes, our special report, 10 Things the Seller Won't Tell You, which we've cultivated. This is decades of know-how. It's a terrific report, very helpful for anyone who's thinking about buying a business. Covers a wide array of subjects that will really open buyers' eyes of things that they normally will not be necessarily given by the seller, that are reasonable to be asking for. It's not always necessary things that seller hides or seller secrets, but there's a lot of those. But things that if you don't ask for them or know to ask for them or look for them, they're not going to be made available to you, and they can easily come back and bite you in the what?
Dupa.
In the dupa. Yeah. And they will. And assuredly, I assure you, they will bite you in the dupa.
You know it.
There's a QR code for people to get that and download it. We have terrific feedback related to it. In every show, we get a bunch of those. So
I know people
are finding it very helpful.
Awesome. And then in closing, I would like to thank our show sponsors. If you are watching the show right now, listening or watching us on YouTube, LinkedIn Live, Facebook, and you're a business owner, or maybe you're an SBA lender, or maybe, I don't know, you just want to start doing some live streaming. You want to start personal branding. You want to be electronified, if that's such a word, on social media.
That. Or digified. Well,
there you go.
Or digitized.
Well, contact our show sponsor, Brilliant Beam Media, and their QR code we'll put up here. They will help you put on these live streams where you don't have to sweat and try to be tracking. Are we going to be okay? Are we going to be on time? What are the questions? I don't know. We let Sia handle that, and she's behind the scenes.
And she's great.
Yep. Sia and her team with Brilliant Beam Media. If you want to lift up your business digital presence, that's who you need to contact. Take a picture of that QR code. And then we have Raquel Flores Connection Center. And
yay, Rocky.
There she is, our sweetheart who supports our show all the time. Thank you, Rocky, for what you do for us. I believe her show is every other Saturday at 10 a.m. Central Time. She's approaching 60,000 followers on LinkedIn. I mean, that's huge.
Nuts.
It is. So if you want to get connected and you're looking to network with other professionals, join her show, take a picture of her QR code. LinkedIn is filled with over 9 billion users. You can get lost in that real fast.
Okay? 9 billion users? That's like the whole planet.
I know. Is it 9 billion or 9 million? I want to say it's a billion or million. I don't know. But anyways, it's a billion.
It's a lot.
Anyways.
It's a lot of users.
You have to get into sub communities, right, Richard?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Ones. Yeah, because if not, you're dancing on the sidelines, right?
That's right.
You have to get the key with LinkedIn. We've had these discussions before, and I've had, let's say, mixed results or what have you. Once you get immersed and you get in with like-minded people, not that necessary, when I say like-minded, not that everybody thinks the same way, but you're all looking for the same outcome. So other entrepreneurs, if you're looking to buy a business, other business buyers, people that are in the industry, stakeholders, that's where you got to dig one or two steps deeper. Because if not, you're just going to accumulate a gazillion followers and spend your whole day answering messages to people that they may be nice, but that's not the goal. That it's a networking platform.
That's
learning and networking. So yeah, you got to dig a little deeper.
Got to dig a little deeper, just like you do on that personal financial statement for slicing and dicing your down payment.
Look at you the way you wrap that up.
You're not, you know it. We're getting good at our craft here.
You are certainly.
DJ Deb and Rock and Roll Rich here to serve. All right. Well, folks, this is the end of our show for this Thursday. Make sure you stay tuned for next Thursday's episode at 2 p.m. Eastern. Any closing thoughts for us, my friend?
All I would say is you are a wealth of information in this area. This is your swim lane. This is your area of expertise. I mean, certainly learned a lot during this. There's a couple of things related to seller financing about buying competitors or leveraging to buy second and third businesses, putting absentee ownership into place, which I wasn't aware of, which is phenomenal. And so when it comes to anything and everything related to SBA lenders, you are it. I mean, you're unbelievable. It's just a great wealth of knowledge. So I'm sure everybody finds this incredibly helpful.
And we're always
learning. And as always, we're always learning. And it's as always, it's wonderful to see you.
You too. All right, everyone. We'll see you next week, Thursday.
Ciao for now.
Bye-bye.